Comics.
Movies.
Music.
Video games.
Technology.
Blu-ray.
Television.
This is the HHW LOD Podcast Network.
Now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is
Abraham.
Hey, Out Now is a film podcast which has Abe and I discussing new movies weekly. We also bring in a little discussion about the latest movie trailers, box office results and predictions, a retro review that has to do with the main feature of the week, games, and other fun stuff. The main feature of the week is the new Steven Soderbergh action film Haywire, starring Gina Carano and a host of others. And this is episode 41. Just, you know, I like saying the episode number.
Apparently, I said now.
We're a little over the hill. And speaking with us about Haywire this week, we have a couple guests. First, we have, just to prove to everyone that he's still alive, from Damn Dirty Plug, and the one man who says he can go full sequence, Jordan Grout.
Oh, hello.
And from the Legion of Dudes and Walking Dead TV podcast, the man with the voice of the White Barry White, Jim Dietz.
Hey, baby, how you doing? All
right. Hey, guys, how are we doing tonight?
Great.
Just swell, thank you.
Awesome. Good to have you guys. I'm happy to have Jordan, just because we made an awful joke about Jordan being dead last
week. Like you.
Well, so I can't control myself sometimes, but Jordan, you're very much alive, am I right?
Oh, I am. I don't appreciate that joke either. You're going down.
Well, all the emails that we got that was with concern. They were
all from me.
There were no emails. But yeah, you're very much alive. And we have Jim with us too, and that's awesome because I've been wanting to have Jim on for a while. Because the sultry sound of Jim Beats.
Well, thank you so much. And I've wanted to be on for a while. I've been a big fan of the show ever since you joined our little network over here on our little corner of the internet. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Great. If anyone else who enjoys our program, you know, does enjoy our program and likes to, you know, contribute in some way, they could provide some iTunes reviews and ratings for us. It'd be wonderful to do. It's very easy, simple clicks, and maybe even a sentence of some kind of positive compliment. It'd be great. It helps out the show. Just throwing that out there. And let's just get into things. We're gonna start with a little know everybody, where we ask each other a few questions and try to get to know everybody and set the tone for this podcast. And I'm going to start. Jordan.
Hello.
What superhero movie do you think Steven Soderbergh could handle?
The Shadow.
Ooh. Damn it. That's a great answer right off the bat.
Thank you.
Nothing to follow that up with. That's just a good answer.
Well, that was going to be my answer no matter what. So I'm glad it worked. All right, Abe.
Yes.
If you could have H.R. Giger make a character in Haywire...
Explain who that is for people who don't know.
Oh, he was the he designed the creatures in Alien and Species.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Who would it be?
Michael Fassbender.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
That'd be awesome if all of a sudden Michael Fassbender just like opens his mouth and like another head comes out and just eats Gina Carano. Anyway.
The head would, of course, look like a younger, handsomer Michael Fassbender.
And it resembles like another part of his body, which Aaron loves. All right, so Jim.
Yes, sir.
Would Haywire have been cooler if Michael Fassbender had been the main character?
Really?
I should go with the cake question.
The cake?
The cake is a lie. No, I don't know. I as much as I would have, actually, I would have rather seen Michael Fassbender in a movie called Magneto Nazi Hunter, based on his part in the first part of X-Men First Class. But no, I'd rather stare at Gina Carano for a long period of time than Michael Fassbender. Sorry. Cool.
I can say that every time I play Wolfenstein 3D now, I just assume that I am Michael Fassbender. Jim, your question.
Favorite Soderbergh films? If you had to sit down and watch a Soderbergh film now, other than Haywire, which one would you pick?
I can take that. Out of Sight. Out of Sight is my de facto favorite Soderbergh movie, and I really like Soderbergh's films in general. We've talked about this before with the In the Contagion episode, I believe, among other times. But yeah, Out of Sight, I love that movie. The Limey is one that I really enjoy watching a lot. Oh, the Ocean's 11. I like that trilogy. I like Ocean's 11 the most, of course, but I enjoy that whole trilogy. I'm not a hater on the other Ocean's films. They're not perfect, but they're especially 12. 12's like a weird experiment. I just enjoy that movie. And Traffic's a great one too. That's not really one you kind of watch over and over again.
I love The Informant as well.
Informant, that's a solid Matt Damon performance.
Yeah,
that's underrated. Yeah, I can go. Abe. Uh-huh. If Ewan McGregor had his lightsaber, and if Michael Fassbender had some further assistance from a certain extra piece of equipment, could they have handled a fight against Mallory?
I think that Mallory would still be able to destroy them. I mean, the lightsaber, does he have the Force, or is it just a lightsaber?
Well, I said Ewan McGregor, not Obi-Wan, so I'll just say the lightsaber. Okay.
I think she could still take him on. And that's, I don't know. I mean, that would be a pretty cool thing to see. But I think that Gina could still take him on. Mallory could still take him on.
I like to see MMA fights with lightsabers.
They'd be missing a lot of limbs. Jordan.
Yes.
Would you rather see Gina Carano play Mallory or Chloe Moretz play Mallory?
Or Saoirse Ronan play Mallory.
That would actually be really awesome.
Oh, yeah, the third one. Saoirse Ronan. I can't pronounce her name. But yeah.
Well, let's just make it the Saoirse Ronan, Gina Carano, Hannah Haywire mashup movie.
Okay, now I want to watch Hannah. I should have bought Hannah at Blockbuster, damn it. Okay, who am I asking?
You're asking Jim.
Okay, this is a Troy question.
No.
The fight between Achilles and Hector, what score would you like that play to?
I was really hoping you were going to tie it back into Haywire, but you didn't.
No.
I would like to play the same battle theme they had during the original Star Trek series when Kirk and Spock would fight. Oh. You know that da 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 da. You know that one?
Yes. That's what I would like. Oh yes.
This is why we have Jim Dietz on our show. Oh yeah.
That's where I would take it. Okay.
I like that. That's better than I thought of.
Mallory from Haywire, Jason Bourne locked in a room who walks out.
Oof. Oh. Now, are there other objects in the room, like a newspaper or a book? Is it just an empty room?
Well, let's say that anything you'd find in a regular motel room. So I guess there'd be a Bible in the nightstand.
Okay. All right. Hmm. That's tough, guys.
I think I'd have to go with Jason Bourne.
There'd be a lot of improv, that's for sure. It basically comes down to the books versus the walls that Mallory uses to her advantage. So
Jason's pretty good in open space.
He is. Damn. I'll probably go Bourne, I guess, just because, damn, he knows how to use a book.
Chloe Moretz.
As Hit Girl, yeah.
And that brings us to the end of Know Everybody. So I'm glad we all know each other just a little bit better because of this conversation that we just had. Anyway, moving on, we're going to do a little movie trailer talk where we try to discuss a couple of the latest movie trailers. And we have a couple action trailers this week to talk about. And the first is going to be Expendables 2, the sequel to Expendables 1, which starred Sylvester Stallone. And, you know,
because a grateful nation demanded it.
It did. And yeah, this is the sequel to, of course, the big star first Expendables film that had, of course, Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, Jet Li, Dolph Lundgren, Schwarzenegger, Willis, Randy Couture. There's a bunch of people in this one. Who else? Who am I thinking? Dolph Lundgren? Did I say that? Damn. Anyway, what?
Damn.
Terry Crews.
Yeah. Okay. This sequel, of course, adds a couple people in there, including a Hemsworth, but not Chris Hemsworth. It involves Liam Hemsworth and Jean-Claude Van Damme, and of course Chuck Norris.
No, they just throw like Colin Hanks in there just for good measure.
As the geek.
But
he's like the palate cleanser.
And from what we can see, Schwarzenegger and Willis both have extended roles this time, opposed to just, you know, weird cameos. And yeah, earlier I might have said that this promises to be bigger and badder than the first Expendables, but with news this week from break from Chuck Norris and then confirmed by Stallone, the Expendables 2 is going to be PG-13 and not R-rated. Mm. So with all that in mind, what do we think about Expendables 2 coming out? Trailer in regards to the first Expendables, I guess. Jordan? Yeah.
I'm not looking forward to it. Even if it were R, I wouldn't be looking forward to it that much. I was not a fan of the first one. And I can't even remember any like memorable violent scenes in it.
I would have to say if it's going to be PG-13, it would pretty much be a waste of time, because the kind of people that really want to see an Expendables 2 do not want to see it as a PG-13 movie. I know Johnny M from the LOD podcast and from the Walking Dead TV podcast, huge Expendables fan, the biggest fan in the world, but I doubt even he would go see it if it were a PG-13 rated film. So
he'll probably go see it. It's just the expectation's going to be moderately lower, I'd imagine.
Or he'll wait for the Blu-ray director's cut with the actual, violence in it.
That's true.
Has anybody seen the original director's cut that's out now?
I haven't seen the director's cut of the Expendables, but with that said, I wasn't a big fan of the first Expendables. It was okay, just because of that novelty of having, hey, there's a whole bunch of action stars from various decades, so, that could be cool, but honestly, I thought it was kind of limp. I was disappointed with the first Expendables film, but
yeah,
there's a sequel and it has even more stars.
You know who they're missing?
Even more expendable.
All they need is like Steven Seagal, and this would be like the biggest movie ever.
Well, given the size of Steven Seagal, you're certainly right about that.
I wasn't too impressed with it. The first one even wasn't that good, even though I was looking forward to it too, but. I'm not too impressed. I'm probably am not going to be missing out on anything if I just caught this on DVD.
Well, we'll see when, we get to that week and we have to talk about a movie. But so the next trailer we can talk about is G.I. Joe Retaliation.
G.I. Joe!
The sequel to the first G.I. Joe film directed by Stephen Sommers. This time, this G.I. Joe is directed by John Chu. And I'm just going to... I believe that's right. Let me make sure that's right. Edit this out if I'm wrong.
You don't like to be wrong in this podcast.
I don't like to be wrong in this podcast. I got it right. John M. Chu. And that name may not be too familiar to people. There's going to be a little grasping when I say the directing credits that John M. Chu has had. But I'm going to read them right now. Step Up 2, Step Up 3D, and Justin Bieber, Never Say Never. Now, before anyone says anything about those credits, know this. The way those dance sequences have been designed, in Step Up 3D in particular... Those are when I saw that movie and I did see Step Up 3D, they basically equaled out to action sequences, the way they're framed and set up, and they're very clear and fluid. And watching Step Up 3D, I was like, this guy could direct an action movie and make it work really well. To my surprise, he got, when he was announced that he was going to be directing G.I. Joe 2, I was really excited about this. Like, that's exactly what I said when I saw Step Up 3D. He should do an action movie, and now he's doing one. And based on this trailer, which is ridiculous and stupid and over the top, it looks like a fun movie to me.
Aaron, you just let everything go, didn't you? You're just like, I love him so much. You just love Justin Bieber. Just admit it.
I'll say this about the Justin Bieber movie. It's not my music. It's not meant to be my music. But that documentary, it's not a bad documentary. It does what it's supposed to do. I had to review that. I had to review the Blu-ray for that movie for Why So Blue. I requested it. It was thrown out there as an offer. I was like, I'll take it. And I looked at it because of my familiarity with John M. Chu as a director. And it's a solid documentary. It's not, I'm not about to like buy a Justin Bieber CD, but it's a well-made film. And if G.I. Joe 2 can pull off being a good film. But regardless, we're going way off topic because G.I. Joe 2 has the freaking Rock in it.
Yeah.
Let alone like this, let alone Snake Eyes is back. It's got this really cool like mix of the White Stripes song in the trailer. It's just a fun trailer. I was digging it, and I'm looking forward to the movie.
I'll say this. If the Rock is in it, I think it'll be pretty enjoyable, but I won't hold my hopes up too high.
The Rock looks way less sweaty in this trailer than he did in Fast Five.
Less cut. They'll fix that.
Well, I guess the bigger news for me even was Bruce Willis.
Yeah, that was weird.
Bruce Willis stars as the original G.I. Joe in the film.
Yep.
Is he like riding around in the back of an El Camino just shooting?
He's riding along in an automobile. What did we think of the first G.I. Joe film?
I loved it.
I think that Channing Tatum should stick to
those awesome comedies. Why are you laughing at me? I did.
No, I'm not saying. I'm just saying that, like, you know, it's cool if you do. I didn't like it that much.
Don't judge me.
I could say that the first G.I. Joe film was in competition for Transformers Revenge of the Fallen for, you know, most explosions and most ridiculous movie, and I think G.I. Joe won. Wasn't by a mile, but I had more. It was you know, it was only 2 hours opposed to 2.5 hours, so, you know, that was something.
There's no Joseph Gordon-Levitt in this one.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Not for him, probably.
They did show them putting up the Cobra flag and banners on the White House, though.
Yeah, so, you know.
I can't wait.
Stuff's going to get real in that movie.
Looks like Channing Tatum dies in, like, the first 10 minutes.
Hey, we'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, they already killed off Marlon Wayans, apparently, which is unfortunate.
Not Marlon Wayans! No!
Well, regardless, Expendables 2 comes out August 17th, and G.I. Joe Retaliation comes out June 29th. So this summer, you know, you got those two to look forward to, among others, because clearly those are higher than Dark Knight Rises and the Avengers. But moving on, here we are. Let's move on to our film review of Haywire.
You're really not getting in the car, are you?
I don't think so.
She is our nation's most valuable weapon.
You got a car?
That's why they trained her.
Negotiations broke down. Just need somebody to go and get the guy.
Wow, that's actually real?
Oh, yeah. All right, so that was a little bit of the trailer for Haywire, the new Steven Soderbergh action film starring Gina Carano. And a whole bunch of other people. I guess I can try to list them right now. Gina Carano, Michael Fassbender, Ewan McGregor, Bill Paxton, Channing Tatum, Antonio Banderas, and Michael Douglas. Big, big, big cast. And this is a pretty standard action story about Gina Carano stars as a kind of an independent contractor of sorts. And she is working on a mission under her handler, played by Ewan McGregor, who... They pull off a job, and then she's put onto another job, which leads to her being betrayed, and she is forced to kind of handle her situation on her own as she tries to seek vengeance on those who actually betrayed her. Lots of double-crossing and MMA fighting scenes ensue, and, you know, action and whatnot. So, that wonderfully vague explanation of what the film is about, let's start with Jordan. Jordan, what did you think of Haywire?
I liked it a lot. I didn't love it, but it's kind of a bummer to say that the staging and choreography are old-fashioned, but I feel like that's true, and it's refreshing to see something like this where you can see what's going on, and it's still just as visceral as the crazy, what's his name, Paul Greengrass-type action scenes. However, I think the screenplay was a bit lacking. I think the plot was a bit too convoluted. Didn't need to be that complex, I felt. And there were elements of it that I wish they would have explored more, but didn't. But, you know, it makes up for it in outstanding action sequences. So,
all right. Jim, what did you think of the film?
I enjoyed it. It was, as you said, it was fairly standard. It reminded me of other films as I was watching it. I think the most refreshing thing I took away from Haywire was seeing Gina Carano in the action sequences. And, I mean, I was having this conversation the other day with one of my servers in my restaurant about the show Buffy the Vampire Slayer and how, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar is a good actress or whatever, but in the show, anytime she'd have to fight anyone, in comes the 18-year-old guy in the blonde wig, you know, as a stand-in. It was very obvious when they switched from one to the other. What I really appreciate about the action sequences in this is that not only, Gina Carano, not an Academy Award-winning actress, but able to pull off these action sequences believably and to be, you know, intimidating physically and a believable threat, you know, in these action sequences. I recently saw this on the movie Columbiana. Did you guys see that?
I saw it, yeah.
very much like very similar theme, you know, revenge flick, you know, woman or whatever. But I didn't really buy Zoe Saldana as an action star, you know, in sequences or whatever. Not nearly as much as I do Gina Carano in that. And I kind of like her look. She kind of has like a Malin Ackerman look to me, you know, in her face. But the I really appreciated her in the action sequences and the like, actually being able to watch her, you know, perform these kind of fight sequences and be believable. You know what I mean? It was very refreshing to see that in a female protagonist. And I mean, we know Soderbergh can do good revenge flicks. I mean, we've seen The Limey before, obviously one of my favorite revenge flicks of all time. But I just kind of felt like the plot was just kind of boilerplate and standard, and it was punctuated by a lot of really great action sequences.
Cool. Abe, what did you think?
Yeah, aside from all the action sequences, I was actually pretty bored with this movie. There were a lot of downtime in between the action sequences. A lot of stuff is unexplained as well. I kind of didn't really like how she's just driving along and then explaining something to this stranger that she knows, and then they kind of don't really tie that end up. They kind of just leave that open for you to figure out. I feel as though there were a lot of actors were unused or are just not used that well. I think that Bill Paxton could have been awesome, but, you know, either by saying game over, man, that would have been awesome. But, it got kind of really weird at the end. It was just, you know, I don't know. I mean, all I'll say is just Barcelona, and that was weird. So, aside from the cool action pieces, and I am there with Jordan, too, which is you can actually see what's going on. I really appreciated that. I really wasn't really digging this movie that much.
It's certainly streamlined. The there's not much to this film beyond its action. I mean, the plot, it has complexity, sure, in terms of there's double crosses and there's things going on in it. But getting right down to it, it's just a movie. You know, she has to get revenge on these people based on what happened. And with all that out of the way, just as the movie plays out, what really what kept me involved in it was honestly, it was the score by David Holmes. It has the second it kind of kicked in, I kind of knew what film I was going to be watching. And I think many will be kind of, they'll be kind of thinking it's going to be something like a Jason Bourne film, except with a woman. But what it really is more of a 1970s revenge kind of flick with someone like Lee Marvin or like Clint Eastwood in the title role. It just happens to be a female using mixed martial arts skills as opposed to, you know, a gun and a badass attitude. And because of that, I was really kind of into it throughout. I don't think it's a great movie, but I think it works as a decent action film that has kind of an offbeat approach opposed to being a standard, like Colombiana would be a good example of that, because that movie's completely average in every way. And this movie, it's also average, but it kind of goes a bit higher just because of how it's shot, how Steven Soderbergh's style kind of factors in. And I dug that. I dug that about the film. I think obviously the highlights are the action scenes of Carano, who, you know, certainly proves herself in terms of being a tough chick on screen. This is her first movie. I mean, Soderbergh literally picked her out of obscurity of MMA fame and just said, I want to build a movie around a tough chick and, you know, see how it plays out. And yeah, the movie's not designed to give her big emotional dive monologues, but, you know, when she's put up to the task of, you know, fighting people, she's certainly effective. And with that said, I mean, the rest of the cast, they're basically serviceable. I'd go out of my way to point out Channing Tatum, because when I first kind of saw Channing Tatum arriving, like, in more movies, like, early on, actually Step Up was the first movie I saw Channing Tatum in. But he kind of, you know, has this presence of just some kind of block of wood actor guy, no real name, but every time I kind of see him, I like seeing him around. He's become kind of, you know,
makes you excited for 21 Jump Street, doesn't it?
It does. I'm really excited for 21 Jump Street. But I think he did solid work in this film in particular, just given the role that he has to play. And I mean, we all know that Michael Fassbender is amazing all the time, but so he does well.
Why do you have to go?
Can't she handle herself? I'm sure you'll cope. I've never done a woman before.
Oh, you shouldn't think of her as being a woman. No, that would be a mistake.
But yeah, overall, I dug the film.
Yeah, I think this is definitely Channing Tatum's best
performance, and I'm looking forward because he's working with Soderbergh and his next. I think it's a comedy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it is, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm after seeing this movie, I'm really looking forward to that. I think Ewan McGregor was actually like the weak link in the whole thing. His accent was terrible.
Yeah, he has that. Ewan McGregor always has a weird thing where he tries to do an American accent, and it never really seems to quite work. Yet he's still done it, like in many films.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Didn't hate him in it, but I just thought he was the weak link.
Yeah. But I mean, getting back to the whole entire plot of it all, I think the plot of it was, I think they're making it more complex than it had to be. It was, yeah, sure, there were a lot of double crosses. I was able to follow it just fine, but it was just, it kind of dragged out, and it was kind of, I don't know. I mean, boilerplate is what you guys have said in the past. Yeah, it is, but at the same time, it's also just kind of cheesy as well. I kind of didn't really dig that. But yeah, I totally agree with the music.
Yeah, it's kind of an upbeat, jazzy
score. Yeah, it's kind of really, like, it's kind of cool, you know? It reminded me a lot of Ocean's 11.
Yeah, David Holmes worked on the Ocean's trilogy and Out of Sight, which I love all of those scores. And actually, in particular with the Ocean sequels, I was like, well, at least I'm going to get another David Holmes score out of this. That's, like, what I'm looking forward to every time I saw another one of those movies. And I did not know going into Haywire that it was going to be David Holmes scoring the film. But the second it kicked in, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a David Holmes score. And it just has this really kind of, this up-tempo kind of jazzy feel to it, where I just kind of, it just made me dig the movie a whole lot more than I could have if it had, you know, a regular kind of basic action score to it.
What did you guys think of, like, the filters that Soderbergh used, either at the night assault or during, like, that yellowish assault when they're just talking? Was it pretty standard Soderbergh for you guys?
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, actually.
It certainly has a stamp all over the film.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice that he used, like, a filter thing at the end when they're in the dark until she goes outside and you can still see there's a lot of, it looks like a water effect or what have you. It's just, like, this blue water effect. Yeah, I just thought it was moonlight, but, yeah, it's true. It's definitely got his stamp all over it.
Yeah, sir, it's not trying to be traffic or anything in sort of, like, you know, crazy, deliberate, distinct visual tones for different scenes. But, I mean, it has a lot of, has a lot of fun with the photography and, you know, a lot of ways to make it seem basically artsier than it needs to be, just to kind of, you know, give it a distinct feel opposed to being, you know, just another action movie. Mm-hmm. Which is, and it really, I mean, it is just another action movie overall, but I enjoyed it. I had fun with it.
You enjoyed, like, even the middle scenes? Sorry about that.
I would say,
like, the in-between fight scenes where she's just...
I'll say this. Besides the opening fight sequence with Channing Tatum, where she just beats the hell out of him, well, they beat the hell out of each other. Really, it's a sweet fight scene. Besides that, the movie really kicks into gear for me basically when she meets up with Fassbender. So there's like another, even kind of mid, basically when she starts fighting with Fassbender. That's really when the movie kind of kicks in. So there's like for me, it's barely 30 minutes in. That's where like the plot kind of, that's where the film's energy kind of kicks into kind of a straight place for me. That fight scene and onward, I didn't have a problem with how the film's pace was playing out. Mm-hmm. In terms of pacing, how was it for you, Jim? Were you engaged?
I don't know. To go back to a point that you made earlier, it just seemed very, very rote, very by the numbers. The plot just didn't interest me very much at all. A good point you made about Ewan McGregor's, not well executed American accent, which was distracting. You know, it just seemed like, it was well shot, obviously, because I mean Soderbergh, you know, is a craftsman, but I just didn't really care, other than, you know, okay, when's the next action sequence? Right. What's the next payoff? The plot, it wasn't that it was, you know, too convoluted. It was more like, okay, well, you know, obviously it's about time for someone to double cross her. Okay, there's the double cross. You know what I mean? There wasn't any, you know, big surprise or, oh my God, or, you know, any kind of like that. It just seemed like I kept waiting through the plot and exposition to get to the next action sequence.
Yeah, even when that point is revealed later in the film about what's going on with the reporter, you're kind of like, well, okay, and then not really blown away by it. It's kind of weird, and they kind of just explain it out of nowhere. Well, while these two guys are walking down a hallway, it's kind of just, it's not really that cool. The way that they did it, but again, I was just waiting for the action sequences. Yeah, and that Fassbender sequence, that one was pretty cool. I was sad to see him go. Also, not to be gay or anything, but Michael Fassbender, he's pretty toned.
Yeah, he's Michael Fassbender. Eh? We've gone over this. I mean, you need to watch Shame, apparently.
Yeah, you'll
see how toned Magneto is, how he is. You'll see Magneto's helmet, but this isn't an excuse. Well, this is kind of an excuse for the film, but I mean, it's certainly not trying to be anything more than it is. The film knows exactly what kind of movie it is, and I understand that's not a great excuse, but it's, you know, the plot's very inconsequential. Like, the movie knows it's about these scenes and about just showcasing the skills that Corrado has, as well as just having a little bit of fun. Like, I think Michael Douglas, with what he's given to do, he has fun with his scenes that he has. Like, he's not really trying to be just a great authoritative figure. He's just having, there's like one scene where there's a phone conversation between him and Antonio Banderas, which is kind of hilarious to me. And it plays out that way. Like, it's not trying to be serious. It's like him warning him, but doing it in like the most blasé manner, where he's just like, maybe you should just try to stay in your house for a while.
Until I call
and
you
your
back.
Family. Yeah. Like, it's just like the way it's, and what do we think of Antonio Banderas' beard, by the way? That's another question.
I think he was going for the Clooney look.
That thing in an Academy Award.
Yeah. He's geared up for Siriana Part 2.
He looks like the younger version of the Dos Equis guy.
There it is.
Interesting man in the world.
It looks like he came out of the Thing, that epic beard.
Yeah, there's a callback.
That's why I said it. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, so I think with Antonio Banderas' beard in mind, I think we've thoroughly discussed the Haywire and our reaction to it. Let's get to our rating of the film, and each week we try to kind of rate films based on when you should go and see it, as opposed to a number, a thumbs up, or whatever. So with that in mind, we have a scale that goes from IMAX to theater, Dollar Theater, Netflix, HBO TV, just kind of forget about it. So on that scale, Jordan, where would you put Haywire?
It was fun watching it in a theater with a crowd of people that they were laughing and cheering throughout, and theater. A couple walked out though, like 10 minutes in, so that was weird. But other than that, the theater loved it, so I'd say theater. The crowd loved it, not the actual theater.
Jim Deeds.
I'd say Netflix. I liked it, but I didn't, you know, it didn't wow me, and I wouldn't really see it. A point to see it on a big screen, really. It's not a spectacle type film, so I'd go Netflix.
Abe?
Yeah, I'd say HBO. I think you can really kind of just wait for premium cable to have it.
Like, Haywire apparently has like our most diverse rating scale.
This is awesome.
So awkward now.
I'm going like a Dollar Theater, I think, is where you can go see it. I think it's very much kind of an adult action movie. Like, it's not really like one that like the teenagers are all going to go pile up and like go and see. It's more like an older couple could go out and see this movie and see a girl kick an ass, and then, you know, at the Dollar Theater will be the place to do that.
God, I just feel like a jerk now.
But with that in mind, and Jordan's jerkiness, let's move on to we'll move on to the box office, where each week we kind of go over the box office totals and find out if our previous week's predictions were anywhere near what the actuals were. And previously, we had two marks, and Mark Hoban predicted $7 million in around fourth place. Mark Johnson he tried to go Ultimate Price is Right rules and predicted $1 in third place. Abe, do you remember your wonderful prediction?
I said second place with $22 million.
You did say that. I predicted fourth place with $8 million, and I'm kind of the closest this week. It came in at fifth place with $9 million. So it's almost dead on. Yeah.
Of course, I suck.
Of course, interchangeable heroine action star with a female involving either zombies, vampires, or werewolves. Underworld Awakening came in at first place. That was an elaborate description. And then you had the Red Tails, which is a really, really bad movie. I'm glad we... I kind of wish we talked about Red Tails just because I could tell about how bad that movie is. But that came in at second. It's
was there a
because,
redeeming
like,
effort in that movie, Aaron?
Was there? I mean... There's three dogfighting sequences.
Really?
And in between that, there's a lot of terrible dialogue and cliched story beats and just really bad stuff. And it just, you really have to want to see dogfights and not just watch Star Wars to really kind of get any kind of appreciation out of Red Tails. Mm. So, yeah. Those are my 2 cents on Red Tails, I guess. But
not even Bryan Cranston could save it.
Bryan Cranston between this and Larry Crown, my number one worst movie of last year.
Larry Crown?
I
gotta watch that tonight.
I've compared Larry Crown to The Room in terms of his scenes. That's how bad his scenes in Larry Crown are, which is really unfortunate given that he's great in Drive and let alone Breaking Bad, you know, the best show on TV. But that's enough about Red Tail. So yeah, Haywire, fifth place. $9 million, costs like a little over $20 million to make, so yeah, it'll do fine. It'll break back. And speaking of Haywire, once again, we're going to go on to our retro review, where we kind of discuss a few movies that we might have thought of while watching or after the fact involving Haywire. So with that said, Jordan, any films came to mind?
I thought of actually Columbiana, because I only watched like 30 minutes of that movie and I turned it off. But I thought about it and how much better Haywire was, and how if I were sitting at home, I would not turn Haywire off. Yes,
it seems so like on point. All right. Jim, any movies come to mind when watching Haywire?
I was thinking of a better female revenge film, Foxy Brown with Pam Grier.
Steven Soderbergh has actually described his Haywire as he's described it as a Pam Grier movie directed by Alfred Hitchcock. That's how he's described it.
It just the whole female revenge angle reminded me of that movie very much, because I've just seen it recently.
Cool. Abe?
I just went with like the Bourne trilogy, and just in terms of he's got to get some revenge. There's like this weird complex storyline and the action sequences, but again, the action sequences I feel were better handled in Haywire.
I have two that came to mind. One is The Limey, which we mentioned before. It's a Steven Soderbergh film starring Terrence Stamp, and it's a revenge flick, and it has the same screenwriter actually as Haywire, Lem Dobbs. And that's just a really cool, solid movie. Really cool revenge flick, very simple, but has a really, really cool editing scheme to it. It makes it kind of stand out, makes it very distinct. And the other movie I don't think many people have seen, it's called Spartan. It stars Val Kilmer, and it's from David Mamet. It's from like 2004, I believe. And you know that movie, Jordan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I love it.
I'm a big fan of Spartan. Like, it's basically Val Kilmer before he got really fat, his last role where the last role where he's quite fit. He's kind of a secret. He's kind of a secret agent. He's like a Marine or a Delta Force guy or something. But he's kind of brought in to help find the president's daughter who's been kidnapped. And it's the way it's handled is very kind of matter of, because David Mamet has a way of writing dialogue and kind of scenes, and it's very to the point. It doesn't try to explain everything outright. It cuts to the chase and has a very deliberate kind of way of speaking everything. And that's, it kind of reminded me of Haywire, the way the dialogue's kind of written, where it's not always, it doesn't treat the audience like idiots. It doesn't kind of lay everything out in just huge long exposition sequences. And it just kind of lets it play out. Now, whether or not that works to the film detriment, Haywire, we were kind of mixed on that. But in that kind of way, that's why I thought of Spartan, which is just a cool movie that I'd recommend, just because I like that movie quite a bit. So, with all of that said, I guess we can move on to something we haven't done in quite some time, Abe.
This in like a month.
Yeah, we haven't done it in quite some time, Abe. Do you want to clue people in as to what I'm referring to?
I think it starts with a G and ends with an aim.
It does, and it is called Game Time.
Aaron, I think that you can be an Academy Award-winning composer. Yeah, I think so.
It's between me and Howard Shore this year at the Oscars, actually.
Oh, I think you're a shoo-in.
Thank you. Well, we'll find out on January 24th, I believe, when the Oscar nominations hit, the day this podcast comes out. So, with all that said, we're gonna play some games.
Woo-hoo.
Game time. Yeah. And
yes.
we have plenty of guests this week that we can do knockouts. And just to refresh everyone's memory, Knockout is a game where one of us names an actor or director, and then the remaining three name a film that, you know, one of those actors or directors' films, and we keep going in a circle until people are progressively knocked out if we take too long to try to think of an answer. So I will name someone first. Let me think of something. Okay, I won't think of something next, because you're all going to think. I'm going to say the order shall go Abe, Jordan, Jim. Okay?
Okay.
So we'll go around a circle that way. Abe, Jordan, Jim. Okay, the actor I'm thinking is Bill Paxton. Go.
Aliens.
Hatchet. Royalty.
Titanic.
Tornado.
That's not a movie.
What?
Twister.
All right, I'm out.
Terminator.
Thunderbirds.
Avatar.
He's not in Avatar. You're out. That's it.
A simple plan.
It's over. You won.
Yeah, you won, Jordan.
Yes.
Jordan gets a point.
Spy Kids 3D.
Thank you.
Is he in Spy Kids 3D?
Yeah, he is. He's in Spy Kids 2 and Spy Kids 3D. Jordan, you think of one. And we'll go me, Abe, Jim.
Okay. Brendan Gleeson.
Okay. In Bruges.
The guard.
Pass. I have no idea who Brendan Gleeson is. I'm sorry.
28 Days Later.
Was he in Gangs of New York?
Yep.
Braveheart.
Any other Irish movie?
Thank you. We'll go me, Jordan, Jim.
Yeah. Aaron, Jordan, Jim. Okay. Steve Martin.
The Jerk.
Parenthood.
All of Me.
The Man with Two Brains.
Little Shop of Horrors.
The Lonely Guy.
Bringing Down the House.
Oof. Shop Girl.
LA Story.
Keeper by the Dozen 2.
The Pink Panther 2.
Father of the Bride.
Bowfinger.
Roxanne.
The Blues Brothers.
Is he in the Blues Brothers?
I thought he was in the Blues Brothers. I might be wrong.
I don't think so.
Okay, I'm out.
Sorry, Jim.
The Three Amigos.
Baby Mama.
Oh, damn it. Oh, God. Cheaper by the Dozen 1.
Damn you. Looney Tunes, Back in Action.
Father of the Bride Part 2.
Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
Sergeant Bilko.
Damn it. I got out. I can't leave.
Oh, man. I was gonna say the Out of Towners.
Damn it,
Jordan! You are alive and well, and you won 2 games.
My life is complete.
That was a good one.
And no one said Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Damn it! No one said Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Should we do one more?
I think so. Yeah, I think we have time for it.
Well, Jordan, you name one. You one, two. We'll go me, Abe, Jim again.
Okay.
Ooh, this is going to be easy. Liam Neeson.
The A-Team.
Taken.
The Gray.
Episode 1.
Batman Begins.
Awake. Or Where. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, you can go Awake, yeah. Rob Roy.
Some other Irish movie.
Thank you, Abe.
But that's all the Irish movies. Michael Collins.
Les Miserables.
I'm out too.
Yeah. No one said Darkman.
No one said. He was in Schindler's List.
No one said.
What about The Haunting? Classic.
I meant that in regards to The Haunting's quality. Okay, now moving on. That's gonna bring us to next week, where we talk about a Liam Neeson film. It's called The Gray.
Can't wait.
Yeah, the new Joe Carnahan directed film, which involves Liam Neeson and a few others surviving a plane crash and facing the horrible survival story, which is always intense. And I can say right now that just be weary of how that movie's being advertised. That's all I'll say. And
it's supposed to be great.
It's gray, that's for sure. I'm just saying, don't focus too much on the central thing that you know in the advertisements. I'll just say that. With that said, let's predict what we think The Gray is going to do next weekend. The Gray opens with Man on a Ledge and the new Kafford Heigl joint, One for the Money.
Yay. We've got to talk about that.
Heigl, all right.
So, with all that, Abe, what do you think The Gray is going to do the next weekend?
I'm going to go conservative this weekend. I think I'll say third place with 9 million.
Jordan.
I don't know. I'll say I think you could do first place with, let's say 14.
I will go a second place showing at 10 million.
And I'm going to, let's see, I'm going to say second place as well. And I'll say a strong 13 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where I think we're going to go with. And with that in mind, I guess that's going to take us to the end of the show. This is going to do it for Out Now with Aaron and Abe this week. You can find more of my work on my personal blog site, thecodeofzeke.com, where you can find all my written reviews, as well as at whysoblue.com for Blu-ray reviews and, other good stuff. And you can also find me at Twitter, twitter.com/AaronsPS3. Abe?
You can find more of my work at walrusmoose.blogspot.com, two animals, walrusmoose.blogspot.com, and twitter.com/walrusmoose.
Jordan?
Oh, you can find me at damndirtyblog.blogspot.com. I just put up my favorite films of 2005.
Oh, I gotta go check that.
2005.
I definitely need.
Wow, 2005.
Just in time.
So go check that out.
Jim.
And you can follow me at Yoda Jones on Twitter. I'm on the Legion of Dudes podcast, available at the HHWLOD podcast network, available at legionofdudes.com, HHWLOD.com. Also, I've been contributing a blog going on at readingwatchmen.com about the comic book Watchmen. We're trying to put together like an academic resource for the book, so check me out there.
Oh, that sounds really awesome. Interesting. I might have to go check that out. Yeah, you can find all the other episodes of Out Now with Aaron and Abe at iTunes. You can also find it at hhwlod.com. As Jim has mentioned, where all the other shows on the HHWLOD podcast network are available to see. You can also find some of the newest episodes and some exclusives at outnow.podomatic.com. You can feel free to email us at outnowpodcast@gmail.com and praise Abe for managing to somehow be incredibly tardy, yet none of us bring it up throughout the show, as well as praise Jim Dietz for providing some sultry tones to the episode, and just say hi to Jordan and congratulate him on still being alive.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
And you can also like our
page. So nonchalant about that.
You can like our page at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where I like having fun on that page. We can post updates and whatnot. And finally, I'm just going to put a shout out there to Adam Gentry, friend of the show, been on multiple times. He's at Sundance right now. He's at the Sundance Film Festival, checking out tons of movies, and he's writing up about it. So I might put a link to that in the show notes as well. And, you know, it's cool to know that our friend is, you know, out there having fun in Sundance, yeah, watching a lot of cool movies that are going to come out soon.
What a jerk. No, I'm just kidding.
So, with all that in mind, I guess that's going to do it. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye.
See you guys.
See you next week.
I'll probably go Bourne, I guess, just because, damn, he knows how to use a book.
Chloe Moritz.
As Hit Girl, yeah.